Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for March the 18th, 2019. This is David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David. How are you? And how's everybody out there tonight? We have another fast hour of information and news of interest. All, of course, concerning our veterans and the families and stuff that goes on at the VA. We are going to hear from six veterans who share their experiences, including the challenges they faced in returning to civilian life after the military service. After that, we have news from Washington. It'll be a fascinating show, so stay tuned. First, I would like to thank two of our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Schiavaroli, who've been behind us and with us for a very long time. Their financial contribution helps us to provide this weekly show for the benefit of veterans and their families across the country. I wish to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions. So you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. You know, and I want to really emphasize that this is a call-in show. You know, David and I get up here week after week, and we provide a lot of information for the veterans and their families and just anyone who's interested in the whole veteran VA system. But it would really be nice to have people calling in and communicate with us and be a part of the show, not just sit back and listen to David and I week after week just talk and talk and talk. So, you know, your views and opinions are as important, if not more important, than anything David and I may even say on this show, because we're just trying to get the message out to you. So again, that number is 1-888-627-6008. You're a very important part of the show, so use it. You can also email me during the show at rickhurley5@msn.com. That's rickhurley5@msn.com. I do check my email, so if you don't want to come on the show and talk to us, yeah, send me an email. I'll play your email. You know, I'll mention your email and you know, read it out loud. So be active. You know, that's how we help these veterans, by everyone being active. You know, this is a war. Helping veterans against the VA is a war, so let's all participate. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. Tonight, courtesy of the VA's Make the Connection program, we're going to hear from six veterans. They're going to share their experiences for the benefit of other veterans. First, we will hear from two veterans, Linda and Steve. What did it take for Linda, an Army and Air Force veteran, to talk about post-traumatic stress disorder with her husband, who was a Navy veteran himself? So listen as Linda and Steve talk about her PTSD symptoms, the ways that treatment improved her life and their marriage, and how all veterans can tap into recovery resources. So Doug, if you'll please roll the first tape.
Linda, Steve, take two.
My name is Linda. I served in both the Army and the Air Force for 20 years. I served all overseas, but I did deploy to Iraq in 2006 as a combat nurse.
I'm Steve. I was a Navy corpsman, but went on to become a teacher for the Department of Defense School Systems.
We met, Steve had just gotten out of the Navy and was being a ski bum up at Lassen, and I was going to college and skiing on the weekends, and he hooted at me.
Good-looking blonde, what could I say?
And we ended up getting married after that and started a family. When I looked at the injuries that I saw in Iraq, people losing both of their legs or arms, their life, you know, I felt I was always a strong person. I didn't think that someone who wasn't physically injured could have problems. But the sleeping problems turned into nightmares and a little bit of isolation. I think the people who haven't taken a weapon in their arm and shot someone, that sometimes we feel what we did there wouldn't relate to PTSD.
Her mother noticed it right off the bat when she returned. She mentioned to me that she's different, she's changed. It's not the same, I don't know, the smile's different, you know?
It was hard, you know? He knew I didn't want to do a lot of things like I used to do, but as I got better, we shared a big part of my therapy, which was making a video, wanting to show my therapist what PTSD felt like in my head. And him helping me really helped share my story with him. And I think that was the beginning of him seeing how I felt with the PTSD.
What I tried to do was always to be there, but there's still times where I just would feel angry that things were going on. And I came from the background where you don't really talk about things. And so as a result, I don't deal with things as well as she does. So even this long after it happened, it still affects me more than I would think.
Willow really helped me. Willow brought joy and the moment every single day. A dog is not judgmental. They don't care what you look like. They don't care what kind of day you have. They're just always happy. And if you can kind of focus on that and see that every day, it really helps. But, you know, it's a continual process of getting better, of adjusting and finding other ways to experience life.
You know, at a certain time, she said, I feel like I'm feeling life more. And it seemed that she started living in the moment, being there. And I believe that there was a growth in that.
You know, I'm a psychiatric nurse practitioner now, and I work for the VA. What you find is people have maybe gone through therapy, but they're still kind of stuck. And I always, when I sit down with them and they're being admitted, I usually say there's like about three things we really got to focus on. One is therapy. You have to process that trauma. Two, there might be medications involved. They help with the symptoms. And three, an area that I don't think we focus on enough is finding a purpose in your life again. For me, it was going back, getting my psychiatric nurse practitioner, becoming someone that can help.
I think as long as the mission continues, then she continues to improve and heal.
I want to see people live their life to the fullest and have given so much of their life to this country that I want them to have a good life. I want them to be happy.
Well, we thank Linda and Steve for sharing their experiences. And one thing that rang true with me is her point about veterans needing to find a new purpose or mission in their life once they've left the military and they are trying to make that change back to civilian life. They need to find a new purpose, a new mission. That's so important. What are your thoughts, Richard?
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, we recently had Jason White called into the show, and, you know, Jason has a severe case of PTSD, and he's dedicated himself to helping veterans through a lot of different programs in Florida. And he mentioned how, you know, that's what's basically keeping him going every day is helping other veterans. And he found that mission for himself, basically by doing the work. He spent about 9 months in Camp Hope in Houston, and finally figured out, how he can get better. And the way he maintains his ability to be better and function is by helping others, which is another key ingredient in recovery. You see that all the time in all aspects of recovery and drugs and alcohol. It's serving others peer-to-peer. Pretty basic stuff, except for the fact that gotta do the work, you know. Can talk about it all the time, but if you don't do the work, you don't actually go out and help other people, then it's you're not going to benefit from it. But yeah, that was a very good one. Next, we're going to hear from a veteran who ended up in prison after his military service, but with help is now doing well. When Ray left the Army, he couldn't adapt to civilian life. Tried to cope by drinking. After a downward spiral, he ended up in prison. He connected with the Veterans Treatment Court, and his court-ordered mental health treatment saved his life. Now he gives back to the veteran community. Again, here we're going to hear from another veteran who found purpose by giving back to the veteran community. Doug, please roll tape number two.
My name is Ray. I served in the United States Army. I served as an infantry soldier from 1998 to 2001. It was a good experience for me. The brotherhood, the camaraderie amongst us infantrymen was unlike any other that I've ever experienced in my life. Getting out of the military was very difficult for me. I didn't know how to adapt to the civilian life. I felt lost in the world. I felt very lost. The brotherhood that I was a part of, I was no longer around my battle buddies. I was no longer doing something around other people that thought the same way that I do. And I chose to drink as a way to deal with life. I was drinking every day, and I was a fully functional alcoholic for a better part of a decade. Once I became a one-man party is when I knew I was in trouble. Once I started pushing everyone away from me, anytime I was out of work, or even including work, my entire life revolved around me consuming alcohol. Because of the alcohol, it was a downward spiral. Marriage, I went through a divorce. I lost my children. You know, I lost my home to foreclosure. I gave up my career with the federal government. I gave up on life. You know, there were times in my life where I actually contemplated suicide. I ended up homeless, out on the streets, in and out of jail. I woke up in a jail cell. I was in for felonies, endangering the public, aggravated assault on police officers, so I had really gotten into trouble there. I did a little bit of time, and I was introduced to Veterans Court. Veterans Court is a program for us veterans. You know, they help us with programs. They court order us to mental health treatment. They order us to get the help that we need. They said I needed the help. Let me go talk to somebody. Let me go see what kind of help I need. And so I did it. Going to mental health treatment, meeting with a mental health provider, I was given referrals for a transitional work experience program. It's through the compensated work therapy program at the VA. It's work therapy. You're working, whether you're working the food service, laundry, housekeeping, you know, you're doing different duties throughout the hospital there just to kind of get you around other veterans and people and trying to get you back to the world of working again. Being around other veterans, you know, trying to overcome barriers and struggles was good for me. I was in other group sessions with veterans that had similar situations as myself. We could definitely relate to one another. We just sit there, we talk about what's going on with our lives and try to help each other, try to motivate each other to make positive life changes. I learned to set healthy boundaries in my life. I learned of different ways to cope with reality than having to self-medicate. Today I practice a lot of self-care. I do things that make me feel good in the heart. Instead of numbing the pain of reality, I do things that make my heart feel good. Because of these programs, the VA sent me to school to be a certified peer support specialist. And it's helped me become a better person. You know, now I get to help others. Others that are going through some of the struggles that I've been through. I've been down some very dark, lonely roads. And if I can inspire one person to make certain changes in his or her life, then I've done my part.
Well, thanks to Ray.
That was really good. Thanks, Ray. There was a lot of stuff, you know, what Ray mentioned there about, unfortunately, you know, abusing alcohol to cope with his PTSD. We hear that over and over again. One thing I want to say to any veteran that's out there or the family member who knows a veteran or a friend of a veteran who may have some criminal problems, and usually they're nonviolent types of criminal problems. But if that's the case and you're in a county that has a veterans court, you need to take advantage of it. don't assume that the lawyer that you have, or if you have the public defender, one is aware that you're a veteran, and therefore you would benefit from the veterans court. I find here in Florida, many times I have to contact the lawyer for a veteran that I'm representing who has some criminal problems, and tell that lawyer, hey, you know, this veteran, this guy that you're representing, the veteran, should have asked the question. Oh, really? They say, I didn't know that. Wow, you know, and I say, yeah, you got to get this guy in the veterans court. And they say, oh, you're absolutely right. And then they get into the veterans court, and then all sorts of great things happen for the veteran that would normally not happen had he gotten into that veterans court. So don't assume that if you do get in trouble, don't assume that someone's going to just touch you on the shoulder and say, hey, by the way, you need to go over to door number two into veterans court. It's not going to happen. So, you know, get off your butt and, you know, look for the veterans court door and get in there and help yourself. Back to you, David.
That's great advice. Next, we're going to hear from an Army veteran. When Pauline was in the Army, she sustained a severe hearing loss. As a result, she felt very anxious, depressed, and had low self-esteem. After surviving two abusive relationships, she sought help from the VA, and counseling helped her learn how to stand up for herself. Doug, if you'll please roll the third tape.
My name is Pauline. I served in the United States Army from 1983 to 1986. For 3 years as a radio teletype communicator, I sent and received messages from commander to commander for the Pershing unit. We used two very, very loud generators for our AC power. And after 3 years of working with those generators, sometimes I had protection, sometimes I didn't. They gave me an exit exam. And the doctor checked me from head to toe. And then he asked me, how's your hearing? And I said, fine, why? He says, oh, your hearing scores are off. I thought, okay, good to know. And my hearing, I noticed, didn't affect me till about a year or two later. And then it got worse and worse and worse and worse. I just started feeling anxiety and depressed, because when I started communicating with other people and missed the conversation, I felt dumb, kind of stupid, and I need help. I was an isolated person. I didn't know who I was. I was accepting a lot of things, negative people. I actually had a first marriage, and divorce was in domestic violence. And then the second marriage ended up being in domestic violence as well, so I just felt I wasn't good enough, and maybe I was accepting the men that would try to control me in my life. So I went to the VA mental health services, and I got counseling. The psychologists and the therapists that I seen, there were several of them, really helped me look inside of who Pauline was and what it is I wanted in life. I'm allowed to cry, I'm allowed to just express every need and want and desire that I have, that Pauline has inside, and share with her my goals that I want to attain. And it's just, it really helps. There's a big change in me. I now advocate for my own rights. I'm an advocate for myself, for disabilities and domestic violence. I ended up going to college, and later ended up getting my master's degree in mental health counseling. My psychologist, she said, well, Pauline, what is it you want to do? Who do you identify with? I said, people with a hearing loss. And I said, well, that's when I told her, maybe I'll focus on the deaf and hard of hearing. So that's when I went in the deaf community and started learning sign language. There are a lot of resources available, counseling, support groups, and resources for those that have hearing loss, mental health issues, and that have gone through domestic violence. There's people out there that will listen to you, support you, and give you a better understanding of who you are and how to communicate with other people. Therapists help me become stronger. happier person.
Well, that's great, and thanks to Pauline for sharing her experience and her insight. I think it's great how she overcame many problems, many hardships in her life, including a severe hearing loss from her military service, and as well as overcoming the effects of domestic violence, and then pressing on and obtaining advanced degrees, becoming a counselor to help other people. Another example of someone finding a new mission, and which also involves helping others and then encouraging others to look for the resources, because as she said, there are lots of resources. The VA has many programs, and there are many non-VA programs out there to help people. So just reach out or encourage someone you know that needs help to reach out. Over to you, Richard.
That's good stuff there, David. Our next guest, Joshua, had a hard time transitioning from the Marines after serving in Vietnam. He bottled up his feelings and tried to cope by using drugs and alcohol. After falling asleep at the wheel and crashing his car, Joshua reached out to the VA for support. Now he has the tools he needs to lead a healthier life. Doug, please roll tape number 4.
My name is Joshua. I served the United States Marine Corps from May of 1967 to July of 1969. I was in Hawaii, and then my battalion was deployed to go to Vietnam. Right after the Tet Offensive, we were the closest battalion to replace the casualties. We lost 26 guys and 41 wounded in a few days, from Good Friday to Easter Sunday. And I witnessed a lot of death and carnage, and my buddies getting wounded. About a month after we had that major battle, I was wounded in a landmine explosion that killed my buddy next to me. That took a toll on me, wondering why I didn't die in the blast. Why did I survive? You know, why did my buddy get killed? And did I step on the landmine accidentally and injure, kill him and injure myself? The military is a community that's, you know, well-run, and you have this camaraderie, and then when you come out to civilian life, it's not there anymore, and adjusting becomes a problem. I was suffering inside and shaking, sweating at night, just trying to find an answer, you know, to feel comfortable with what my buddies and I went through. I don't think they knew what PTSD was at that time, so I kind of self-medicated myself with marijuana, with cocaine, with drinking. My wife then, you know, was seeing that I was struggling emotionally. I mean, you gotta stop drinking, you gotta stop taking the drugs. And for some reason, my daughter crying reminded me of those crying kids, you know, when we do search and destroy missions. It brought me back to that. And so I was having a tough time with that. After 4 years of marriage, I left the marriage. I dated girls here and there, but I didn't have a really good relationship. You say, why are you so shut down? You're always shutting down. You don't share with me. And I thought, everything's great. Everything's great. Everything's wonderful. Everything was always great. But I was dying inside. Self-medicating put me in a better mood. The cocaine, the amphetamines, you know, put me in a happier mood, you know. But it was short-lived. And I fell asleep at the wheel, and I crashed into a utility pole. And I said, oh, my God, I could have killed somebody. It's 8:30. Kids are playing in the street. And I said, that's it. You know, no more. I can't do this anymore. I went to the VA down on 23rd Street and 1st Avenue, Manhattan, and I was assigned a psychiatrist. She really helped me through a lot of the issues that I was facing. I grew so much from allowing myself to just vent. I'm able to tell someone, I said, I'm feeling lousy today, and this is why I'm lousy. And for some reason, by being able to be honest and relate to that, it just dissipates. It just goes away. I'm dating a gal now. We're working on our fourth year. And it's probably the first person that I've ever really connected with where I can tell anything to. Find, you know, what's available out there. Everyone's different. Everyone's different. Reach out and find a counselor, a good group try everything because something will click with you.
That's a great stuff by Joshua there. One thing I want to point out that he brings up here, and that is that, you know, it took Joshua to crash his car. And as he said, you know, he could have killed somebody, could have killed some kids, killed another driver. So often when we find alcoholics, drug addicts, before they finally get into recovery, they have to have consequences. And as they say in the program, these consequences can be jail or death. In this case, Joshua avoided both. He didn't go to jail, and he didn't die. But he could have. There are a lot of veterans out there, and you know who you are, and you got drug problems, you got alcohol problems, and you're not doing anything about it. And there's help all around you, as you've been hearing on the show tonight and on previous shows. And if you go to the VA, or if you go to your local AA chapters, NA chapters, there's help all over the place. Please get the help that you need. Don't wait for the consequence that could end your butt up in jail for a really long time, victimizing somebody, killing somebody, or yourself dying, in which case, you know, your family is put through a lot of pain. So before you end up with that ultimate consequence, you know, analyze your life and realize that if you got a problem, if you're an alcoholic, you drink too much, you know who you are. You know, you know what the symptoms are. It doesn't take a genius to figure that one out. Go get the help right away. And maybe Joshua's story can help you. Maybe this tonight's show can help you. But something, you know, the light bulb better go off because, you need the help. Back to you, David.
Yep. All excellent points. And that's really why we highlight these veterans who are talking about their experiences. And the VA has taken the time to record their stories as part of this Make the Connection program, which the VA wants people to publicize. So we're doing our part to do that. Perhaps it helps some veterans to hear from other veterans themselves, people that perhaps they can relate to. So we've offered a variety of experiences tonight. We have two more guests. The next one is Elliot, who had a tough time transitioning from the Marine Corps into civilian life. A lot of anger, a lot of anxiety. He went to his local vet center, another resource offered by the VA. And through the vet center, Elliot gained some tools and coping skills to improve his mental health. And then from there, he went back to school, got his associate's degree, is doing a lot better. So let's hear tape number 5, Doug, please.
My name is Elliot. I served in the Marine Corps from 2003 through 2007, and I served in Iraq. My transition into civilian life was really challenging. Before I went in, I was really calm. I was relaxed. I was the type of guy who was really level-headed. And when I came home, I wasn't the same. You know how some people, they say they have a short fuse? I almost had no fuse. If I got angry for any type of reason, I would immediately just chew somebody out as if I was a drill instructor in the Marine Corps. A lot of the relationships that I had, whether they were romantic, friends, family, were all deteriorating. Me and my older brother got into an argument, which ended up turning physical. My mom comes out from her bedroom hearing this commotion, and she freaks out, not knowing what to do, ends up calling the police. That was the point in my life where I realized I had a serious issue. They took me to the VA and I was put on the 72-hour hold, and that's when I started getting the help that I needed. I went directly to a transitional housing facility. They had counselors, they had medication, they had resources for putting a resume together if you wanted to get back into the job force, and I felt like I was becoming a member of society again. I started college in 2010. When I was in classes, sometimes I would notice my anxiety levels would rise because of the other students in the room. going out to, like, for instance, nightclubs if I wanted to go out with friends. Crowded restaurants would give me really high levels of anxiety. Even being in traffic on the freeway, living in Los Angeles, I felt like somebody might be following me. And so it started to really have a negative impact on my ability to succeed in school. I dropped out in 2013. I knew I had issues. I knew I had PTSD, but I didn't know why. I mean, I knew it was related to combat, but I didn't know why I was reacting to certain stimuli the way that I was. So I went to the vet center in Corona, and I started seeing a counselor there. She basically educated me about what was happening in my brain so that I was able to understand why I was having the reactions that I was having. So now I could take steps towards actually fixing each individual symptom and recovering from each individual symptom so that I could learn to manage them. If you're in traffic and you notice that your anxiety level is going up, you can do breathing exercises. You can roll the windows down and get some fresh air. She knew that I loved to sing, so she said, turn on a radio station that you love or play a song that you love. Sing your heart out. You know, use your ability to do music and sing as a form of therapy. And it started to really work for me. I enroll back in school. I find a major that I actually like. I was happier. I was able to focus again. My energy levels were a lot higher. I graduated with my associate's degree in behavioral science on the dean's list from that same college. Since then, I've been going to counseling. I've been doing the therapy that the Corona Vet Center counselor mentioned. My mom definitely has noticed that I'm a lot more kind to people. Now I'm a lot more patient, and I'm more positive now than I've ever been. Take advantage of every resource that's out there. Go to the vet centers. Go to the VA. Get counseling.
Thanks to Elliot. I think he made a lot of great points. You got to look out for the help, the resources that are there, because there are plenty of resources. And veterans, you know, in the military, you learned about persistence and not giving up and overcoming adversity. And you just have to keep your focus on those same skills that you learned while in the service to your life as a civilian and overcoming problems that you have. Richard, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you hit it right, the nail on top of the head there, David. I really don't have much to add on that one. I mean, let's get to the next one. Our final guest tonight was a Green Beret who served in and survived Vietnam. When he came home, he couldn't sleep. He had nightmares and drank too much. It wasn't until decades later that he reached out to the VA for support. And individual therapy helped him open up about his experiences. Doug, please roll tape number 6.
My name is David. I served with the United States Army Special Forces from 67 to 69. My time in the Army was just a great challenge, I think. It was physically, emotionally, mentally, and especially going to Special Forces, where you needed all three of those qualities in order to advance. The things that affected me happened both while I was in service, particularly in Vietnam, because that's where the rubber really meets the road. You don't eat well. You don't sleep well. You know, it's always raining or it's always hot, the mosquitoes, the snakes, the leeches. And on top of that, you know, everybody you encounter wants to kill you. So you do that day after day after day after day. It's going to leave a mark. When you come out of that and you feel that something's wrong, well, it's up to you to fix it. You're not encouraged to go seek help, really. That transition period is very, very difficult. Even though you do it alone to a certain extent, I was fortunate that I had, you know, a lot of family and friends that were very supportive. There were the sort of classical symptoms, if you will, of PTS. You know, sleeplessness, nightmares, irritability sometimes. I didn't understand a lot of what I was going through. Just didn't understand it. And I was other-focused. I drank a lot when I first came back, and as I was working, there'd be times when I'd start drinking on a Friday night, and I'd quit drinking Sunday so that I could wake up on Monday and kind of go back to work. And that went on for quite a while until my new wife said, you know, something's got to change here, buddy. And so I turned into myself. I subsequently got divorced. There were no, you know, great emotional attachments, if you will. And so I kept it pretty much bottled up inside, never talked about it, never expressed it. I finally reached out to the VA. Gosh, I'm trying to think how many years passed, decades passed. One of my sisters was very persistent. She was very helpful and urged me. She was very gentle, but I got the message and that I better get out there. Otherwise, you can look forward to a not very happy life going forward. That struck me. And I went to the Phoenix Medical Center is where I went. And I was treated well. I got the treatment that I needed. They outlined some, you know, different methods and whatnot. And they said, you know, which one kind of appeals to you? And I said, sitting here talking to you feels good. That's okay. And they said, well, we'll just keep doing that. And I started to open up a little bit more, you know, and I was able to talk to, you know, friends and family a little bit more about it, which was very helpful. Don't let the enemy defeat you at home. Every veteran understands that. But you're not going to do that alone. You need somebody to walk you through it, help you through it. Whether it's a family or friend or a spiritual leader or a professor, no matter who it is, make that connection. That's hugely, hugely important.
That's all good stuff there. Hit on a bunch of really good points. I mentioned this a while ago, but I wanted to remind everybody again. You know, we say in the program, addiction is short-term pleasure and long-term pain, and recovery is short-term pain and long-term pleasure. And I think this gentleman reinforced that concept, and his life obviously is so much better in recovery than it was when he was actively using. So my hat goes off to that gentleman. Over to you, David.
And as he said, don't let the enemy defeat you at home. I think that sums it up pretty well. It's very sad in his case, though, that, as he said himself, it took him decades before he really got the help that made a real big difference in his life. But I've heard that in many instances from veterans of the Vietnam War that I've represented in their VA cases, that due to the nature of the Vietnam War, often they came home. It was not a war where they had victory parades for the veterans. They not only were they often not welcomed home, but upon reaching the West Coast of the United States on their flights back to the States, they might be met by Vietnam War protesters who would spit on them and call them baby killers and other things. And imagine that, you know, after having just survived 12, 13 months over in Vietnam, that's your welcome home. Well, it's not surprising why a lot of them then had even more difficulty. And the VA in the late 60s and early 70s and throughout the 70s certainly wasn't the VA that it is today. So good news is there are a lot of good resources out there, as many of the guests and this Make the Connection interviews have said. You just need to be willing to reach out for those resources. So we've got about 15 minutes. Go ahead, Richard.
You know, David, you made the comment that it took him decades, and that's unfortunate, but let me reiterate. Excuse me. It doesn't matter when you get there. You got to get there. And if it takes one decade, two decades, or three decades, never give up the hope of getting in recovery and getting healthy. Because, you know, when you, you know, the damage that you do while you're an active drinker or drugger, is, you know, to your friends, your family, it is horrendous. And then when you get into recovery, you can repair all that. So, you know, I run into veterans who eventually get into recovery, and one of the things that they tell me is, well, they figured, what, you know, why do it now? You know, I'm just going to, I don't know, die, or what's the point? The point is you can get better. The point is you can get your family better and your children better, and everyone else can get better when you get better. But so long as you remain in addiction and actively drinking and drugging, everybody around you is going to have the same pain. So if it takes one decade, two decades, or three decades, it doesn't matter. Get in there and get the help. We've heard tonight all the different people that have gotten the help and how they reached out to VA services and non-VA services. And, you know, their lives are better. So if you want the same result, step up to the plate. And, you know, don't let the war at home kill you. All right, David, back to you.
Well said, Richard. Thank you. And just to remind our listeners, we've got about 13 minutes left in the show, but if you want to call in and offer your comments or if you have questions, our toll-free call-in number nationwide is 1-888-627-6008. Again, toll-free call-in number nationwide is 1-888-627-6008. Let's go to some news from Washington about the VA. You know, in many prior shows we've talked about the costs of war, and really the VA budget is an example of the ongoing effects of war. This a week ago today, the VA announced that the Trump administration is proposing a total of $220.2 billion for the fiscal year 2020 budget for the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, which is a 9.6% increase above fiscal year 2019, $220.2 billion. Secretary Wilkie of the VA said, and I quote, the budget request will ensure the nation's veterans receive high-quality health care and timely access to benefits and services. He went on to say, and I quote, the budget supports the most significant transformation of the VA since its inception, positioning the department as the premier provider for veteran services and benefits. This is a significant increase in VA funding and demonstrates the administration's commitment to supporting our veterans, unquote. A few budget highlights from this $220 billion fiscal year 2020 proposal will include $97 billion in discretionary funding, which includes resources for health care, benefit administration, and the national cemeteries, as well as $123.2 billion, an increase of about 11.1% in mandatory funding, which includes disability compensation, pensions, readjustment benefits, housing, and insurance. The second largest federal government agency is the VA, and the first is the Department of Defense. So between the DOD's $700 billion a year budget and the VA's over $200 billion, you can see that's pretty significant expenditure for national defense and then the effects of the ongoing effects of war and military service. The proposed budget includes specific itemized components, including $8.9 billion for the implementation of a law whose acronym is Mission Act. The Mission Act stands for Maintaining Internal Systems and Strengthening Integrated Outside Networks Act, another tortured acronym thanks to Congress. But the Mission Act of 2018 provides greater choice for veterans on where they receive their care, meaning when they can receive it in the private sector. Maintain current care for current choice program users provide a new urgent care benefit, and expand the caregivers program, pretty controversial program. It also, the budget also includes $1.6 billion, almost $500 million above last fiscal year, for electronic health record modernization. That's an incredible amount of money just for electronic records. They also have an issue of note to veterans and their families and veteran groups. The budget proposes $9.4 billion for mental health services. That's an increase of $426 million over 2019 budget, which includes $222 million for suicide prevention outreach alone, a $15.6 million increase over 2019. Again, that's $222 million proposed for the budget 2020 just for military veteran suicide prevention outreach. That's just incredible. But it's a reminder of the, you know, ongoing costs and effects of war. The VA budget also includes a proposal for $547 million, a $42 million increase above the last year, for gender-specific women's health care. According to the VA's press release, this increase will help meet VA's goals of developing a designated women's health primary care providers at every site where women access VA care, and improve the availability and quality of services to women veterans. And finally, last but not least, this budget includes $1.6 billion for construction, including $410 million for the construction of a new VA hospital in Louisville, Kentucky, and $150 million for the Manhattan, New York Medical Center. Over to you, Richard.
On February 26th, the VA Secretary Robert Wilkie announced the effect that effective in April, it will provide priority disability benefit claims processing the initial claims from discharged combat veterans who have been awarded the Purple Heart Medal. Secretary Wilkie announced his decision at a hearing before the House Appropriations Subcommittee on Military Construction, Veteran Affairs, and Related Agencies. Those who hold the Purple Heart, the recognition of wounds taken in battle, will now receive priority consideration when it comes to claims before the Department of Veteran Affairs, said Secretary Wilkie. The Veterans Benefits Administration will amend its priority processing categories to include initial claims received from Purple Heart recipients on or after April 1st, 2019. Purple Heart recipients are already treated on a priority basis at VA hospitals and are exempt from copayments for their medical care. The Purple Heart Award is the oldest U.S. military decoration and is awarded to U.S. service members for wounds suffered at the hands of the enemy. General George Washington awarded the first purple-colored heart-shaped badges to soldiers who fought in the Continental Army during the American Revolution. In 1932, it was revived to commemorate Washington's 200th birthday. I wanted to add there, I was asleep at the wheel here, David, because I actually had two emails that I was reading from veterans who've been listening to the program, Joe and Bob, and I want to thank them for their emails. But they were commenting, and they wanted to thank us for some of those audio tapes, because in both instances they had very similar situations, and they just wanted to kind of reiterate to those who are listening to the show that help is out there. So go get it, because in one case Joe was 76 years old before he finally went and got the help. And he was 3.5 decades, or actually 4.5 decades, I think he said. And the other guy was an Iraqi veteran, younger guy. There's just two more examples of people getting the help that they need. Back to you, David.
Yeah, great points. Two more quick items of interest for veterans, or reminders of things we've mentioned on prior shows. Registration is underway for the 2019 National Veterans Wheelchair Games, and registration will continue through April the 15th, so you got less than a month to go. This event will be held July 11th through the 16th in the great city of Louisville, Kentucky. The VA announced that veterans who are interested in registering for the 2019 National Veterans Wheelchair Games can do so online, as I said, through April 15th. The website is easy to remember. It's wheelchairgames.org. That's wheelchairgames.org. You can sign up there for the National Veterans Wheelchair Games register by April 15th, which is tax day. The events offer 19 different competitive events, including such sports as air guns, archery, basketball, bowling, field events, sand cycling, power soccer. The list goes on and on. Athletes will compete against others with similar athletic ability, competitive experience, or age. Again, for more information, and the events will be July 11th through the 16th, Louisville, Kentucky, go to the website wheelchairgames.org. And then related news, for those of you veterans that like winter sports, approaching on the calendar very soon, March 31st to April 5th, 2019, the National Disabled Veterans Winter Sports Clinic in Snowmass, Colorado. The website is wintersportsclinic.org. That's wintersportsclinic.org. It's an annual clinic hosted by the VA and the DAV, Disabled American Veterans. It serves as a world leader in adaptive winter sports instructions for injured veterans, and it promotes sports therapy and rehabilitation. Hundreds of veterans are expected to participate. Last year, nearly 390 veterans participated. It's a great program. There'll be hundreds of volunteers, corporate sponsorships, nonprofit organizations, and other individuals who are supporting this life-changing clinic. Again, if you're interested, it's wintersportsclinic.org. Over to you, Richard.
Before we close the show tonight, we'd like to provide with our weekly reminder to veterans and their families about an important VA program called Coaching Into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call. Toll-free number is 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. David, why don't you take us out?
Thanks. Well, it's time for us to go for this evening. We'd like to thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivroli and Corey and Hurley Law Group. We'd also like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, and we hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.